So what is going on? And why is the debate in Washington solely over cuts? As we said, conservative Republicans have held up Speaker John Boehner's planned vote for today because they didn't think there were enough cuts. Didn't we spend our way out of another historic sticky wicket, the one after the Depression? Let's get to questions with Robert Reich, who needs no introduction, but let's do one anyway. Former labor secretary, professor of public policy at Berkeley, author of 13 books, his latest, Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future, is now available in paperback for some summer reading. Robert Reich, welcome.
Hi, Robin.
Well, we're hearing the U.S. has some wiggle room as to that August 2nd deadline, some money to pay some bills a little bit beyond that. But NPR reported yesterday there's no debate that if the U.S. does default, it'll be a big deal. But they're not sure it'll be as catastrophic as the Obama administration says. This is confusing. What do you think? What's the difference between a big deal and catastrophic, and which do you think it'll be?
You mean what's the difference between a disaster and a catastrophe?
Or
Armageddon? I mean, look, at this is already an evolving disaster because if you've been watching the financial news, the dollar has already been tumbling relative to foreign currencies because so many international investors are worried that the United States may default. Treasury bills maturing in August, this is after the supposed default or the possible default, are already worth far less than Treasury bills that are maturing in September because people are worried they may not get paid. And as you've heard already, a lot of contingency plans are going into effect, but many of those plans also are accompanied by higher interest payments simply in anticipation of the possibility of a default. So it's already happening. It's happening quietly. If a default does occur on August 2nd or August 3rd or even August 4th, what you're going to have in this country is interest rates beginning to rise so quickly on variable rate mortgages, on auto loans, on all sorts of things that people already owe money on, because all these interest rates are pegged to the Treasury bill, which is the, at least has been, the gold standard, the risk-free, supposedly risk-free currency gold standard for everything else.
Well, does this thinking then also apply? You're talking about whether or not the country defaults, but we've been hearing that whether or not it defaults, the credit rating will be dropped, even if the debt ceiling is raised. And President Obama said this week that, as you say, interest rates would skyrocket on credit cards, mortgages, car loans. But yesterday, again, on NPR, Joseph Gagnon of the Peterson Institute said, you know, again, it's not meaningless, but it just isn't a big financial deal to have the credit rating dropped.
Well, it depends on whether you're a borrower or a lender. Most Americans are borrowers. Most Americans will find that it is a big deal. In fact, most people have seen their wages, if you adjust for inflation, actually declining over the last several months, if not several years, if they have a job. And as we know, almost 15 million Americans don't have a job. So anybody who is living on a very short leash, who is living from week to week or paycheck to paycheck, doesn't want to face higher interest rates on everything they borrow. And that's going to slow the economy even more, because if everybody has to worry more about interest rates on what they borrow, if everybody has to worry a little bit about delayed Social Security checks or delayed Medicare checks, then they're not going to spend as much as they did before. And if they don't spend as much, we have a deeper jobs recession than we have even now.
Well, this brings us to your major question. And as you write, the key is that consumers aren't buying because of that fear that you said. And so employers aren't hiring because consumers aren't buying. It's a vicious cycle, the title of a recent blog. And so in a case like that, historically, it's the government that needs to step in and do what?
The government has always, the last eight recessions we've had since the Second World War, indeed, the Great Depression, if you count the Great Depression and what we did after the Great Depression, that is, we spent like mad. We didn't know we were getting out of the Depression by entering the Second World War, but that kind of government spending boosted the entire economy, put everybody to work. What the government does in situations where you're in a recession or a depression, where there's not enough demand coming from consumers and businesses to keep the economy going and to keep people employed, the government has been the employer spender of last resort. The government increases its spending, not only on so-called counter-cyclical programs. That's a fancy word for programs that go into effect when the business cycle goes downward, like unemployment insurance, for example, but also spends more in order to counteract the negative effects of all of this consumer and businesses holding back from buying. Right now, Robin, we're something about 5, maybe 7% below our production capacity. 15 million Americans out of work, but also factories and offices and commercial real estate shuttered. There's a lot of capacity that we have that we're not using. And ordinarily, we spend more in order to counteract that negative effect, get that capacity back to work. Even Richard Nixon is purported to have said, we're all Keynesians now. And by that he meant we all understand Keynesian economics, which is government is the spender of last resort.
So do maybe some of the things that FDR did with that thinking, maybe a new WPA or a Civilian Conservation Corps, tax incentives for employers to hire. But, you know, there's a lot of questions about this, and one of them is, you mentioned the shuttered factories. We're coming up on the break, so just one question as we get to it, because it's a question of our listener. Yeah, consumer spending makes up about 70% of the GDP now, so as you said, if consumers aren't buying, the economy flags, and maybe the problem is, you know, put all that money, try to get that not to be the basis of the U.S. economy. But how do you do that? How do you suddenly switch from 70% of a buying country to a making country?
Well, you know, that would depend largely on exports, but we are not a major exporter. We do export, certainly, but we import more than we export. Eventually, that may turn around, Robin, but that's going to be a very, very long time in the future. China may allow its currency to appreciate, move upward relative to the dollar. It already is. Other countries like Japan and Germany that are major exporters to the United States and to other countries, maybe they will become more consumer-oriented, certainly Japan and China. But we can't wait 10, 15, 20, 25 years until these countries become more consumption-based, because we just have a jobs crisis right now.
And we're talking to former Labor Secretary and UC Berkeley Professor Robert Reich. He makes the case that historically the U.S. government has stepped in and spent money to help save the economy. But Robert, just some of the questions that come with that. First of all, as we mentioned before the break, the political climate. You yourself say on your blog, this is probably impossible to do right now with the Republicans, especially freshmen, newly elected Tea Party-backed Republicans, demanding cuts, and Democrats, as you write, afraid of their own shadows. But one of our listeners write, you know, to fund government by perpetually escalating borrowing is just plain dumb. How about forcing people to do things like get rid of the bloated military, challenge the Republicans to prove their fiscal responsibility by increasing the tax rates on the wealthy or getting rid of the tax breaks?
Well, it's all music to my ears, Robin. I mean, I think that obviously we've got to bring the long-term deficit down. The way to do that is to get rid of corporate welfare, that is, subsidies and tax breaks going to particular industries or sectors of the economy that have no economic basis, that are there purely because they have political clout. Also, agricultural subsidies, why do we need them? I mean, that's another form of corporate welfare, because most of this goes to large agribusinesses. Defense spending has gone by leaps and bounds. There's not any clear indication what we're getting out of it. And indeed, we don't even know exactly why we are where we are around the globe and why other nations, particularly advanced nations who are our allies, aren't spending more, helping bear some of that burden. With regard to many other forms of spending that have no real basis in terms of either safety nets for poor middle-class people or working-class people, or are related to public investments in the future, they ought to be questioned. It's not clear why we have them. And finally, obviously, we've got to ask the very wealthy to pay their fair share. As a side note, which probably ought to be more than a side note, the top 1% of Americans by income are now taking home almost a quarter of all national income, total national income. We haven't seen this in 80 years, Robin. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, their marginal tax rates, both income tax and also capital gains taxes, are lower than they've been in about 70 years. And so it seems entirely fitting that if somebody is going to sacrifice over the long term in terms of bringing the budget deficit down, the very wealthy should be doing that sacrificing.
But again,
and
that...
yet in Washington, we can't even begin that conversation.
Right. Well,
you've got
we've been remarking on that, that there is no conversation about that, and again, no conversation about spending, no conversation about, well, wait a second, this all seems to be, from one bullhorn at least, about how government has become so bloated. You didn't hear that as we marched to two wars, or as you've said, let the tax cuts for the very wealthy continue, or have an unpaid-for prescription program for the elderly. Now, but what about the argument that spending doesn't work or hasn't worked? David Brooks is one who argues we had the stimulus bill. It didn't have a big effect, and he points to economists who say you just don't get as much back per dollar of federal spending as people like you, Robert Reich, claim?
Well, for one thing, most of the studies show that the stimulus that we did have, although not large enough, did save about 3 to 4 million jobs, and unemployment would be higher, substantially higher today, had we not had that stimulus. But there's another larger factor. Maybe David Brooks is pointing to it. I don't know. With the extent of inequality we have right now, Robin, when so much of national income is going to the top 1%, the middle class, the vast middle class, doesn't have the purchasing power it used to have to turn around and buy all the goods and services it is capable of producing at full employment. The top 1%, if you're very rich, I mean, being rich means you already have most of what you need and most of what you want. You're not going to spend nearly as high a percentage of your income as somebody who is middle class or working class or poor. And that widening inequality itself is making efforts to stimulate the economy much more difficult.
So, Robert Reich, how do you get spending on this particular table? John Judas writes in the New Republic about President Obama saying that Obama is acting like Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover, of course, some say falsely blamed for the Depression, but it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt who was seen as doing the spending that pulled people out. Herbert Hoover was blamed for not. So even from a Democratic president, you're not hearing about spending. How do you get it into the conversation?
Well, Robin, a lot of this has to do with public understanding, public education. There is something called the bully pulpit. The president has more of an opportunity to speak to Americans and educate them about the real issues than almost anybody else. Now, again, the deficit does have to be brought down over the long term. And one way to do that, as we've talked about, is through getting rid of corporate subsidies and corporate welfare and raising taxes on the very wealthy. In the short term, we do need more public spending to get people back to work or hire people directly, as you said before, the WPA, the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. But President Obama hasn't talked about this. He has talked almost incessantly over the last 6 months about budget deficits, getting deficits under control. He had a deficit commission that came out recommending $3 of deficit reduction for every dollar of tax increase. He has frozen federal salaries, frozen non-defense discretionary spending. And I'm a big fan of the president. I voted for him. I think he is his temperament is terrific. I think he understands these issues. And when I talk to him in private, as I have done on a couple of occasions, he does seem to get all of the issues and has the understanding that is, in my book, very correct and appropriate. And yet, for some reason, he seems unable or unwilling to use his bully pulpit as educator-in-chief and help Americans understand what's going on. And that leaves the bully pulpit, or essentially it leaves the entire public conversation to those who say the deficit and government is the biggest problem.
Robert Reich, again, former Labor Secretary. By the way, you mentioned your book, your latest, Aftershock, The Next Economy in America's Future. A conversation I hope will continue. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Robin.